Thanks, blessings, Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, July 16th, 2016. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Kip Stube. Here are our top stories this evening. A political commentator says the arrest of Zimbabwean civic society leaders won't solve the country's problems.
It's quite clear that the economic problems have to be addressed head on. The issue of the civil servants has to be addressed head on. The issue of a conducive economic environment has to be addressed head on.
A Mandela Washington fellow says her program is going well so far in USA.
The last 3 weeks has been an intense mix of academic coursework, leadership training, and networking, offering very invaluable insights into American systems, American culture.
And as usual, we'll focus on issues affecting women. Stay tuned. An independent political analyst says the arrest of civic society leaders won't solve Zimbabwe's current social, economic, and political problems. Dumisani Nkomo believes that the countrywide arrest of people protesting against the deteriorating economic situation is undemocratic. Speaking in a political panel with Nick Mangwana of ZANU-PF, Nkomo stressed that Zimbabwe needs new leaders to turn around the economy.
What we need to do is address the deeper seated problems. The president said the $15 billion is missing. That was the president of the country. Up to now, not a single person has been arrested. The issue of the $15 billion was raised by the president of the country. And up to now, not a single person has been arrested.
Yes, so Mr. Mangwana, your quick reaction to that before we proceed to the next stage. Just very quick, less than a minute.
As the Minister of Finance was very clear, there is a difference between a heist and an economic loss. An economic loss is typical of what we suffered due to the economic sanctions against us. $45 billion, that was lost in economic terms. So those are very different. It's not like somebody went to the vault full of diamonds and picked those, put it on a truck and ran away. Having said that, I'm not excusing the corruption that's in the country. Something should be done about it. And we expect the leadership to do something about it. I'm not excusing the looting clearly that's happening in the country. Something should be done about it because the country can benefit from it. Having said all that, in asserting our rights as individuals, in accordance with the Constitution, we should not infringe the rights of the other people. So if I choose that I'm not going to work today in solidarity with whatever cause that is there, I shouldn't attack my neighbor for choosing to go to work because I'm thinking you are selling out or you are not subscribing to my cause. Everybody, that's the freedom. That when you choose to go or to go to work or not to go to work, if somebody goes, you don't set an illegitimate roadblock. You don't put rocks on the road to make sure, or boulders on the road to make sure the other person doesn't go. So everyone who wants their rights respected, they have to respect the rights of the next person. Even though they do not agree, even though they believe that what the other person is doing undermines their cause, you still should not push your will upon other people. Everybody should stay within the framework of the Constitution, including institutions.
Yes. So let's bring in Mr. Nkomo. Mr. Nkomo, your last word on this issue. And if you may focus on the end game, you know, in these stairways, what is going to happen?
Yeah, I think what is important is to realize the legitimate concerns of the people, is to recognize the reasons why there's been a call for stairways, for boycotts, for protests and so forth. Whilst you may not agree with some of the methods it's quite clear that the economic problems have to be addressed head on. The issue of the civil servants has to be addressed head on. The issue of a conducive economic environment has to be addressed head on. The issue of conflicting government positions on economic policy has to be addressed head on. The challenges of unemployment have to be addressed head on. So it's very important for the government to then engage and dialogue with its citizens. It's very important for the government to then engage and dialogue with all people that are affected. Failure to do this may result in a revolution. So it's very important for the government to listen to the cries of the people. I mean, we can't continue this route forever because people are really suffering. If you're in Zimbabwe right now, you see what I'm talking about. The level of suffering is unsustainable. And sooner or later, those young boys and girls will say enough is enough. And some of us, the briefcases and suits and laptops, will not be able to stop that revolution.
Your last word, Mr. Mangwana?
I do not question at any point the legitimacy of the people, of the grievances, or a lot of the grievances. They are legitimate. I do not question at any time the constitutional mandate of the police to maintain law and order. What I would question are the methods of the protesters and the methods of the police. So in short, both parties, the people that protest legitimately within their rights, as bestowed upon them by the Constitution, should do that within also the framework of the Constitution. So both the police and the protesters, it's a question of how are you doing it, what you want to do, or how are you doing what you're obligated to do. The protesters within the law, please. The police also within the Constitution and within the law, and everybody will be happy. And obviously, back to the government, yeah, there are legitimate concerns, and something should be done to turn around that economy. Something should be done to make people's lives a bit better and a bit more bearable, because definitely and clearly they're suffering in Zimbabwe.
That was independent political analyst Tumisani Nkomo. You also heard from Nick Mangwana, a ZANU-PF activist based in London. The Mandela Washington Fellowship comes to a close in 2 weeks' time, with the nearly 1,000 participants meeting with President Barack Obama for a final summit in Washington, D.C. One of the fellows is Faith Ndlovu, a media specialist doing leadership studies at the University of Illinois. She tells reporter Ntungameli Nkomo about her experience so far.
The last 3 weeks has been an intense mix of academic coursework, leadership training, and networking, offering very invaluable insights into American system, American culture, as well as a deeper understanding of the African context and the African landscape, as I'm also interacting with 25 fellows from 18 African countries.
What's the one most important thing that you'd say you have taken away so far?
Several things have been outstanding for me. One of them being the enabling framework for media freedom and freedom of information, and how this enables the media in America to report freely on issues, to dig deeper into issues, and to investigate issues without fear of arrest, without fear of intimidation. And, of course, the ability of the media as well to freely access information on time and as needed. And for me, this is critical for fostering the watchdog role of the media, as well as for accurate reporting, for professionalism. And this has served to strengthen my belief that with commitment on the part of the media to be professional and commitment on the part of the government to create an enabling environment, media self-regulation is indeed a viable policy alternative for promoting media freedom and public accountability.
In 2 weeks' time, you'll be meeting with President Barack Obama here in Washington. How do you feel about that?
I feel very, very much excited. And one of the key highlights so far was our visit to Illinois, where we went to the House of Representatives and we saw where President Obama sat as a senator. And we also managed to get an insight into the life of America's 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, and the ideals of human dignity, the value of justice, And the quality that he stood for. So that has been very, very inspirational. And as I go to Washington to meet President Obama, I'm feeling very excited and very much inspired. And so far, my key takeaway is that for Africa to move forward, what we need is ethical leadership, accountable leaders, and as well as strong institutions that are grounded on ethics and accountability.
Faith Ndlovu is a Mandela Washington Fellow and Media Specialist with the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe. She is currently interning with the University of Illinois. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Zimbabwean communities in the Yanga district will be able to construct facilities to dramatically improve their health and sanitation, thanks to assistance from the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, and its Community Water Supply, Sanitation, Hygiene, and Natural Resources Management, also known as SeaWash program. In early June, at the Ruronquo District Development Fund Rest Camp, Robert Shawatama, the Provincial Water and Sanitation Subcommittee Chairperson for Manicaland, officially handed over to the people of Nyanga District $40,000 in materials to construct or rehabilitate 83 boreholes, 45 pumps to extract water, 105 drinking troughs for animals, and 102 latrines. Chairperson Shawatama also presided over the graduation of 18 community latrine and water pan builders and 16 village pump mechanics, who had been trained by Development Aid from People to People, or DAP Zimbabwe, with funding from USAID. With guidance from the District Development Fund, these builders and mechanics will assist the communities in constructing and repairing their water infrastructure and ensure long-term sustainability. In total, USAID's SeaWash activities will provide safe and clean water to 2,400 households and 6 schools in the district. The communities of Nyanga North have long grappled with access to safe and clean water due to frequent breakdowns of boreholes. Some families travel for 10 kilometers to access safe water, while others sleep queuing for water at the boreholes. Many boreholes in the district are being chained and locked as communities try to safeguard limited water resources. Others have introduced strict water rationing, with households only allowed to collect 2 20-liter buckets per day, regardless of the household size. USAID is proud to support Nyanga District to improve access to safe, potable water, said USAID Zimbabwe Acting Mission Director Bruce Abrams. With this newly acquired technical expertise and building materials, these communities are now able to protect themselves against waterborne diseases.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As usual, we now hand you over to Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye. Tonight, we're gladly joined by Kerina Mujati, a ZANU-PF member who lives in the United Kingdom and shares her views about the situation in Zimbabwe and her struggle to have her voice heard within her party. We start off by asking Ms. Mujati about what her views are about what is going on in Zimbabwe right now.
What is happening in Zimbabwe, I'm sure all of us were expecting it at some point. Since the 2013 election, I think the government and ZANU-PF, who are in charge of Zimbabwe right now, they had a mandate, and this mandate was to deliver their election pledges. And unfortunately, nothing has been delivered to the nation. So you can understand the frustrations. All understand that at some point, I was expecting things like strikes and all stuff. Because if you look at the 2013 ZANU-PF pledge to the nation, if you look at Zim assets, they promised people like 2 million jobs. And where are the 2 million jobs? So those kind of things, if a government is not accountable, it can end up going like in this direction we are right now, because it seems like the Zimbabwean electorate were conned into voting for something. As the situation it is right now, it's sad, because at the end of the day, people that got children who need to be looked after. And I believe that government should create opportunities whereby every citizen of the nation can reach their full potential. If the government would like, by the way, an accountable government to each citizen's welfare, I don't think any citizen will be really frustrated like where it is now. But this is like, it's a ticking time bomb, because the government is not being accountable, and it seems like they are not listening to the nation.
You have said that you are a staunch ZANU-PF supporter yourself. So where do you stand? You are clearly acknowledging that there is a problem.
there's a perception in our Zimbabwean politics that when you belong to a political organization, you are just supposed to go along with it. And some of these people were shouting at me, screaming names at me on Facebook right now. They just know me maybe last week because I said my opinion about Ivan Mawarire. And I've been doing this campaign about my party and the government to be accountable since the time after 2018. I started writing about corruption after 2018 election because of what happened with Obet and Pofu's banks. I could see it's wrong. It should not be allowed to go on. I do have family who lives in Zimbabwe. I do have my parents who live in Zimbabwe. They're experiencing these challenges. And at the end of the day, I support ZANU-PF. I'm not just a blind supporter. I'm not just a blind follower. And I think if my party had tried to listen to what I was saying, writing, to the extent that at some point there were treason and blasphemous charges leveled against me, maybe we shouldn't be here where we are. Maybe if they tried to listen to me like one of their own, maybe we wouldn't have been here where we are now. But there are some people who doesn't know the journey I've taken to where I am now in 2016. They just think that I've just written about Ivan just because I want Facebook attention.
What exactly did you write about Pastor Ivan Mawarire that got so much backlash from people?
Yes, I was questioning his motive. I was questioning his motive because you don't tell me that. You just cut something. You want people to stay away in their homes, and you are not engaging those people you are mourning and complaining about. That was my post. And because to me, it was just like a non-event, because even Mawarire, he didn't have like a team of negotiators or advocates to act on behalf of the nation so that they can take their pleas to the government to say, look here, we voted for you. You are in charge of our nation. And we gave you a mandate to make sure that you protect us as your citizens. And also, you should look after our social welfare. Like, safe clean water should not be a luxury. It's a right to have safe clean water. Because people are paying their rights. That's what I was condemning, to say, what did you achieve today? Yes, you stayed away. And the president has not said anything. Nobody is saying anything about this stay-away. So how can you measure your success? That was my point. And then they came out, then people start shouting and insulting you with their vulgar language. I've been there before. They should try to look for other names to call me, not like what they're calling me.
Where do you see the country going? You're a ZANU-PF supporter yourself. What's the way forward then?
I still believe that if you look at ZANU-PF ideology, ZANU-PF is a people's party. And I am sure right now to say that instead of the party focusing on these wars which is going on about the station and all stuff, I think it's high time the party should come back together, go back on the drawing board, look at the core values of what made them to say that, okay, fine, we are going to fight for our people's justice. But now we've seen that the government is like, I don't know whether it's arrogance or it's just I don't care attitude in some of them people within the government, because we need to go back to the drawing board, look where we are going wrong, start listening to our people. We need to go back to the grassroots. We need to engage, we need to consult, and we need to action.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kerina Mujati, a ZANU-PF member who lives in the United Kingdom, for having been our guest here on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye. We hope you are going to have a wonderful weekend.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. You preach a man, don't tell me. Heaven is under the earth. You are dopey and you don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold, and half a story has never been told. So now we see the light. We gonna stand up for our rights. Come on, get up, stand up. Brothers, stand up for your rights.
The music of Peter Tosh coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. Now to recap today's top stories. A political commentator says the arrest of Zimbabwean civic society leaders won't solve the country's problems. And a Mandela Washington fellow says her program is going well so far in USA. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night.